News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Sound Bites. This is America's longest running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good evening. It's Sunday, the 30th of October, Anno Domini 2005, and you lucky people, you're listening to the Halloween edition of Soundbites.
You got your underwear on backwards?
Yeah, suddenly we're doing a count. What?
I said you got your underwear on backwards?
Apparently I do. It's Halloween. Come on. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Andrew Welch.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is indeed the Halloween edition of Soundbites. Not that it has anything to do. To do with Halloween, but we have Andrew Welch with us today from Ambrosia Software. They make lots of great nifty stuff, mostly for the Macintosh.
Right, we do some Windows stuff, but mostly Mac stuff.
Right, what's going on with you guys now?
Well, we've been working on a whole bunch of nifty stuff. We just came out with a free product for Mac OS X to print envelopes.
Oh, so nice!
A nice little freebie, a widget. You know, you hit a button and it will automatically just hit print and the envelope's out and you're done. You're back. You're good to go.
Now,
which is an update of a classic program that
really
we've used for years.
One. Really old one, yeah.
Now, I have to ask you, as a Macintosh developer, how do you feel about the move to Intel?
We're actually fine with it. I mean, it means a little bit more work for us, but not a whole lot.
Yeah, according to Steve Jobs, you click one button that says Intel.
It's not,
and I got some swampland for you too.
It's not quite like that, but it's, you know, from our point of view, we don't really care what the processor is. It makes no difference. Anything that sells more Macs or will give them the flexibility to make better machines, we're all for it.
Right. But have you got a development machine yet?
Yep, we've got a couple of development boxes, and we actually do have a lot of our stuff already up and running. So it really isn't too bad. It depends on what you're doing, but it isn't bad at all.
And it runs comparably in terms of speed and power and...
I hate to say it, but it's actually faster.
Oh, see? See, now it comes out. It's actually faster.
Well, for certain tasks, yeah.
Right.
And that's one of the things that we as Mac salespeople are a little excited about, is we don't have to worry about this megahertz myth anymore, that our Macs at 2.7 gigahertz are as fast as your Intel's at 3.5 gigahertz.
But the real interesting thing
apparently they're not, according to Andrew.
It depends on what you're doing.
Yeah, right.
Well, for certain everyday things, the integer performance is better. But, you know, when you're using something that takes advantage of the vector processor, then it does a lot better on the PowerPC. But the real interesting thing is I have some friends of mine that work at Apple, and they said the biggest issue was not processing power, not anything like that. It was heat dissipation. If you open up one of the G5s, they've got these massive heat sinks, okay? And Apple wants to do a lot of interesting, unique things with their design, and they can't do them if they're kind of weighted down by having to put these huge heat sinks in. So that was one of the biggest reasons for the move.
Well, water processing.
Yeah, the liquid cool.
In the current G5s, they're using liquid cooling. But still the heat dissipation that they have to... I mean, those processors are designed for workstations and mainframe kind of stuff. I mean, they're big time processors, and the kind of cooling things they have to do on that are pretty ridiculous.
You know, people laughed at me before, but I can almost see. And
people laugh at you a lot.
I know. Well, what can I say? But anyways, my thoughts on before, and this was a long time ago though, was to do like a liquid nitrogen.
Could work.
You know, I mean,
even
if it's a scaled down version of it, some type of like Freon or something like that cool it.
They actually have been using liquid metal to cool certain processor units. They've tried mercury. The thing is, you know, if the mercury breaks open, that is a pretty serious
problem. Yeah, it's pretty bad. Yeah.
Yeah, you get somebody in there tinkering around, they tick on something they shouldn't, and you got a mercury spill all over.
Yeah, that would be, what's the word I'm looking for?
Bad.
Yeah. Yeah, most of the liquid cooling systems these days are using basically antifreeze.
Right.
So it's dangerous if you drink it, but, you know, it won't kill you if it spills out of the thing and you're cleaning it up.
Right. And there are a couple of companies in town who do that. I'm thinking about that for my next machine because I'm getting tired of the noise.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. I'm just getting tired of the noise in my desktop.
Yeah, but no, there are some fans out right now
that are whisper quiet.
Right.
They are unbelievable, especially and I know you don't believe his name, but my buddy Harry Legg.
Yeah, there's no such guy.
He literally has
fans. It's his sister Peg that we're worried
about.
Yeah,
right. He has fans in there because he's recording stuff in that that are so quiet, you have to look to make sure, check the lights to make sure the machine's on.
Right.
Yeah, and some of those ergonomic concerns are the main reason that Apple did the Switch.
Right.
It wasn't so much that the processing power wasn't there. It's, you know, they want to come up with these really stylish, not computer looking computers, and they can't do it with the current G5.
Right, because you're pretty much stuck by.
We've been waiting for a G5 PowerBook? We've been waiting forever.
Well, it's never going to happen.
Well,
not unless you want to toast your thighs.
The prototypes have been in the works at Apple for about 3 years.
Right.
Okay, but they can't get something that's cool enough and uses little enough battery to make it viable.
You got a half hour battery life, and it runs at 200 degrees on your lap.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
If you don't mind that, it's a great machine.
It'll toast your bagels while you surf the net.
Now, you have to help me out here because I haven't really followed this very much. But there's a, it's not just a plain any old Intel box. There's a module or something in the BIOS or something that makes it an Apple product, right?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, maybe in the final shipping box, but you open up the developer box that we have. And it looks pretty much like a plain Jane Intel motherboard.
Isn't there some sort of...
That's the TPM, the Trusted Platform Machine chip.
That's not in what we've got, but...
Right, that's theoretically will be in the next versions. But the people on the net have already shown that it's cracked. They've already installed macOS 10 on generic PC boxes. Apparently it helps if you use the Intel 915 chipset motherboard, which Apple's using, which makes sense.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to see how Apple works that. They have said they'll do everything in their power to stop macOS from running on generic PCs. And that's either some checksum or some extra chip in the box, or their massive legal department. But they
or all of those together.
But they don't have any plans to stop anyone from running Windows on their Mac.
Sure.
So we're hoping the next version of Virtual PC, which won't need to be virtual anymore. The whole reason Virtual PC is so sluggish and the performance is so bad is it is emulating a radically different processor.
Right.
Everything is completely different. So that you can boot Windows, and in fact, we've heard of this on the net too. You take a standard Windows XP CD, stick it in your Mac, and it doesn't know it's not an Intel machine and installs Windows no problem.
Right.
They'll do it. It'll work something like Wine in that you know you just run your Windows apps in another window.
And so you've got the best of both worlds.
Yep. Okay. Sounds very cool. I'm actually looking forward to it myself. I've been a big fan of the Mac, but I can't. How many machines can I have on my desk at once? Although I had a Mac Mini for a while.
How many can... You know, the rack support.
Well, exactly. Right. Exactly.
That's one of the advantages that the Mac even has now. You've got your Mac applications and your Unix applications natively.
Right.
And through either Wine or Virtual PC or some of the other Windows emulators, you can run Windows apps if you want to.
Right.
So then this next step will make it even easier.
Well, but, you know, whether I'm running Windows, I don't care whose apps I'm running. That doesn't bother me
under
any set of circumstances. But now you talk about radically different designs. Look at the Mac Mini.
Right.
You know, it's a beautiful little box, and I'll bet that there are a million more interesting designs that if you didn't have to worry about the volume in one specific spot of the...
And I think that's a big thing that Intel gets out of this deal, is that Intel is always coming up with new processors, and they want some kind of cool-looking machine that they can showcase at a trade show. And Apple fits that bill perfectly in that, you know, they'll be the ones coming out with some kind of avant-garde machine, and Intel can bring out, you know, the dog and pony show and show their great new processor in a really nice, attractive, aesthetic-looking box. And I think that's what Intel is getting out of it. But just to touch on the DRM issue, I think part of that may also be to appease the media companies. I mean, Apple is moving big time into, you know, both the iTunes in terms of the music that you can get online. They've made tentative steps forward in movies online with the new iPod Video. And I'm wondering if they do put any kind of DRM in there, which I don't know anything about, but if they do, I wonder how much of that may have to do with appeasing the media companies more than, you know, pirating the OS, you know?
And we're also hoping it doesn't lead to the development nightmare we see under Windows, where you have to test your machine on literally a million different combinations of hardware, software, OS, and patches.
That would be terrible.
Yeah. With the Mac, you're pretty much certain that, you know, there's 200 Mac models out. It's probably going to work on them.
Yep.
That's what I thought it was.
That's what I thought it was, too. All right, listen, we're going to take
a little side note.
When we come back, we're going to have a little bit more of Andrew Welsh, but we'll also talk about the AOL Instant Messenger worm. This isn't a good one, so you need to pay strict attention. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Andrew Welsh, Rob Linton, and me, Nick Francesco, with you on Soundbites 1180 WHAM.
From answer your questions. Back to more Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Cool.
I just watched that last night, the second one. It was very good. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Andrew Welsh.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites.
I'm darn glad to be back.
We're glad to have you back.
Well, after that trip going down, as folks know, I was gone for a couple weeks, or a week, two weekends, and I drove down through from here down to Daytona.
Yep.
I'll tell you.
Not really the place to go last week.
I'll tell you, from South Carolina down to Georgia, I appreciate the drivers up here.
And that's saying a lot.
Well, I think down there, if you use your turn signals, it's a sign of weakness. No lie. I'm on a three-lane highway doing 70. The folks are passing me like I'm standing still. And they're passing me on the right-hand side. And no signals. They're just weaving in and out, in and out. And talk about truckers down there. I mean, I love truckers and everything else. But the rubber and debris that we saw, I literally had just about scared out of me because I'm going down along the highway doing 70, and a tractor trailer is passing me, of course, on the right-hand side, and he spits up a piece of rubber. It had to be, a good foot wide and about 3 foot long. Comes slapping up the side of my passenger side and takes out my mirror.
Yeah.
I had an imprint on the backside of my mirror of the tire tread. I mean, it's unbelievable. I was glad to get back home.
Yeah,
I mean, even though
were.
We hit snow, that four-letter word in West Virginia.
I hate the S word.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't want to see it.
Yeah. In West Virginia, you hit snow.
West Virginia.
Nice.
We were in, it was a town called Beckley, where they literally closed it down the weekend before because of bungee jumping. That's your big entertainment for the year. They closed the town down for one weekend and have bungee jumping.
That, the squash festival, y'all hurry down.
You all come down here.
Next year, we're actually going to use real bungees.
But I mean, they closed the town down, and I was talking to my wife at 6 o'clock in the morning, and it's raining. 20 minutes later, we got 3 inches of snow on the car.
Well, you're a Rochesterian. You're used to that.
Yeah, that's nothing.
Big deal.
But let me get used to it.
You're right.
Not after it's raining. I just come from 80-degree weather, and it's supposed to be in the 50s. Not shoveling snow off. I didn't have my snow brush with me.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're a Rochesterian. You always have your snow brush with you. What's in the trunk of the car in August? A snow brush? Sand?
Shovel. No, that doesn't go with it until November.
Oh, no, you always have them in the car.
No, we put the bike away.
No, you're a very trusting man.
The brush goes into the car. No, not before that. No, not allowed. Sorry.
All right, we're going to get to the phones now, and we're going to talk to Sean in Holly, New York. Welcome, Sean. What's your question?
Hi, good morning, gentlemen.
How are you?
Good.
You got a moose problem?
I'm sorry?
You got a moose problem?
It says mouse. Yes.
It looks like moose from here. They're big critters, long antlers, they go through the yard, they can really rip it up.
Do they have moose in Holly?
Your call screener didn't run a spell check, huh?
Yeah, apparently. Well, moose is a legitimate word. That works.
Yep.
What's your moose issue?
Well, see, I've got a Dell PC, and I'm running Windows XP, and the problem is my mouse is freezing up. I'll be going along, moving my mouse, and I'll hesitate until eventually it just totally freezes.
Do you have dial-up, or do you have a broadband connection?
I got a broadband connection, Roadrunner.
Okay, when the mouse freezes, does it happen all the time or only certain times?
Certain times. I mean, I restart the computer, and it'll work for a little bit, and it'll just, it's sporadic. Like, right now, it's not moving out at all. It's done.
So you've danced a tango, though?
Yes, I do. Yep.
Well, now, what kind of mouse is it? Is it a one with a ball in it, or is it an optical?
It's an optical.
And what kind of mouse pad do you have?
I just use the desktop.
Okay.
What's the pattern on the desktop? We've seen problems if the desktop is too uniform, you know, a solid white desktop, the optical mice can't track on it very well.
Well, I tried that. I just took a piece of, you know, a lot of paper and put it down on the paper instead of moving on the paper. When the screensaver comes on, I can move my mouse and it'll make the screensaver shut off. But as far as navigating around the computer, it won't.
Now, the other thing, though, is on the energy saving, is that all turned off in the computer?
Yes.
In other words, if you go into the control panel on energy saving and they all say never?
Yes.
So it's not going to sleep too soon.
Yeah, because sometimes
was this the mouse that came with the computer, or is it
a new
mouse?
No, I bought this at the store.
One of the problems that it
might...
Updated drivers. And also, you may need to remove the drivers for the old mouse that used to be there. A lot of times, multiple mice drivers will fight each other.
What kind of mouse is it? Is it a wireless mouse?
No, it's a wired.
A wired optical mouse. Pretty standard these days.
Yeah, and...
Do you have an NVIDIA card? NVIDIA graphics card?
No, I don't.
Now, that's an odd conflict. A graphics card conflicting with
the
mouse?
No, I've seen it. I've seen mice conflict with the video cards. And sometimes you got to go through and check both the video drivers, sound drivers, and the mice drivers and make sure you get the most latest and greatest.
Absolutely upgrade the drivers, and that probably
let us know if that'll help you.
Yeah. When we come back, like a pouty four-year-old, Microsoft threatens to take its ball and go home. Stay tuned after the break to find out whose playground Microsoft is threatening to stomp out of in a snit. In addition, don't forget, we have Andrew Welch from Ambrosia Software here, and he's happy to answer your questions about programming and about the Macintosh and about all kinds of interesting things. You Mac people, here's your chance to call in and talk about how wonderful your platform is for gaming. You're not doing it, so give us a call when we come back with the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
This 7 days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Andrew Welch.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. I told you we'd talk a little bit about Microsoft threatening to take its ball and go home. Well, the South Korean Fair Trade Commission is looking into whether Microsoft's inclusion of its instant messaging software and media player in Windows violates the country's antitrust laws. Microsoft has said it may be forced to withdraw Windows from South Korea entirely if the commission requires it to tailor a version of Windows specifically from the country. Now, wait a minute. Withdraw Windows? What kind of kindergarten move is that, for heaven's sake?
I'm going to take my marbles and go home.
Or is this just a case of brinksmanship? I mean, they threaten and then eventually Korea caves or whatever it is. Alternately, you know, shouldn't Microsoft be allowed to do business the way it wants to do business? I mean, it's their machine. Let them do what they want.
But if they're violating South Korean law, then they either have to change their product or not sell it there.
You can't just you know, dictate
right, that's
to other
the
countries.
Point here. Korea is saying they're violating their antitrust laws.
Well, the real issue is that basically any PC that you buy, for the most part, will come with Windows on it.
Right.
So Microsoft is gradually including this product, that product, the other product, and companies that make competing versions of it. You know, anyone who owns a computer already has a free version of it.
That started with the browser wars 10 years ago.
And that's the issue. Yep. Yeah.
Right. But now what Korea is saying is that's illegal in their country. And Microsoft now really should man up and make a decision. You know, either we're going to follow the laws of the countries we're trying to do business in, or we're going to stop doing business in those countries.
You're in their playground, and you got to play by their rules.
And the reality is, it's not going to hurt Korea at all.
No,
because Korea has an incredible number of really good Linux distributions in the Korean language that do everything that they want to do. They don't need Windows. The Mac is available in Korean. They don't need Windows.
Although, interestingly enough, the iPod doesn't sell very well in Korea because there are some other really good Korean brands.
Right, right. There are a lot of really good Korean brands.
It's very different than in Japan, where the iPod is selling much much better than a lot of native Japanese companies.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
So South Korea is very very nationalistic.
Well, it's yes, that's part of it. They prefer to buy a Korean product before they'll buy a non-Korean product. But in addition, they're ludicrously inexpensive over there.
Yeah.
Their players are much less expensive than an iPod is over there.
I'm not so sure that South Korea doesn't need Windows, though. I mean, because if you set someone up with a Linux desktop, it'll be functional for certain tasks, but there is a real problem of interoperability in terms of reading documents and doing day-to-day stuff that there still is somewhat of an issue with. You can use OpenOffice.org and open up most files, okay? But you still do run into problems. So I don't know.
You know, I got to say that I run my main desktop at work is a Linux box.
Mm-hmm.
And I use OpenOffice.org almost exclusively. And I have Abbey Word and KOffice and all that other stuff too. But I use OpenOffice.org almost exclusively. And I have never, and our faculty do a lot of amazing things. They're doing, they put equations and stuff, and they've got graphs and charts, and they do everything. And I've never had a problem opening any of their files.
Well, you would be the first person to admit that you're not the average computer user, though.
But I'm just opening a file. I mean, all my users
are. We've been seeing that about Nick for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not very average. Yeah. I admit that.
So if you give OpenOffice to an average user and tell them they have to save as a Word file, there's a little trouble there.
Well, yes. I see what you're saying. You're talking about going the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a certain amount of sense. All right, we're going back to the phones. We're going to talk to Deb in Rochester, New York. Welcome, Deb. What's your question?
Morning, guys. I'm about ready to tear my hair out.
Okay.
I've been using Firefox for about a year.
Yeah.
And a couple of weeks ago, for some reason I have not yet been able to figure out, I do not get all the graphics. I get text. But like on Yahoo, I get the word I don't get the word Yahoo across the top. I get the nifty little graphics for the ad. But everything works on IE, except that I don't want to use IE.
Right, right. Well, that's good for you.
So I've tried about everything I can think of, including, Security Tango and updates and everything, and I'm out of ideas, so I was hoping you guys might have some.
All right. If you click on Tools and then Options, down the left-hand side you get five or six icons, one of which is Web Features.
Correct.
Under Web Features, you can check or uncheck Load Images.
Correct.
Check to see.
Yeah, I tried both. I tried checking and then I tried unchecking.
Corrupt cache?
All right.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Before we there, because that's the next thing. The next thing to look, though, before you go there is under Load Images, it also checks for the originating website only.
Correct.
What often happens is with a lot of systems nowadays, they've got a separate server that serves up all the graphics.
Okay.
So make sure that's unchecked, or there will be a lot of sites where you can't see an image.
Okay, so I should check Load Images, but uncheck the for originating website only?
Yep.
Right. Now, the other thing you want to do is for the cache.
Yeah, clear that
Steve?
Out.
Steve?
Right, yeah.
That was Andrew.
Andrew, go ahead. Tell him what he's... What she needs to do there.
I'll defer to you. Go ahead.
All right. Yeah, basically what might be happening is that the cache for Firefox has become corrupted in some way.
Okay.
And so you need to
clear that out.
You need to clear that out, basically.
And for you folks that don't know, what the cache is it literally is a picture of the website at that particular time.
So
and it stores it. So the next time it goes to load, a lot of the stuff doesn't take as long to refresh when it's loading.
Right. And then when you have, and the way to do that is, again, under Tools Options.
Right, I'm there.
The Privacy tab, there's a cache, and there's a clear button next to that.
Right. And it's clicked it.
And then give that a try and let us know if all of that works for you. Thanks. Oh, looks like we're going to take another quick break. That's very exciting for us. When we come back, a mouse is just a mouse, right?
Uh-uh.
Wrong. When we come back, Dave will tell us about a great new must-have mouse. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Andrew Welsh, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Andrew Wells.
And I'm Rob Linton.
Who?
Rob Linton. Yes, I can say my last name today.
Yeah, it's nice.
Too much coffee. He's professional.
See, you know, when you use a different name all week long.
I don't use a different name all week long.
And then, well, I know for cashing your checks and stuff you do. So, when you actually have to use your real
nice
name.
Nice save. Very nice save. I like it.
It gets to be tough for you. But, you know.
FBI still wants him, huh?
It's the FBI is looking for him hard.
Give him a break. Witness Protection Program. Come on, give him a break.
The show tunes
he's
playing.
Was it the Windows Protection Program? Anyway, Dave's going to tell us about a brand new mouse from Logitech. Go, Dave.
Boy, just when you thought mice couldn't do
much. While you're doing that, I'm going to try to get on AOL. I can't. I'm having trouble.
Steve got it, huh?
I know. I don't know what the problem is. Yeah, Steve, come on over here.
Anyways, just when you thought a mouse couldn't do much more, Logitech has now come out with this mouse called the Logitech Media Play Cordless Mouse. It's optical and wireless. You can also get the adapters if you want to go, really want it to hook up to a PS2, but you don't want it. All right, what the big features of this mouse is you know, you normally have your buttons to go up and down, which this thing has 11 different buttons that you can set. You can go up and your normal scrolling up and down. You can scroll left to right. So a lot of our folks that have problems just literally scrolling down can also go and use another button to scroll left to right if everything isn't on the screen. One of the other features is you can control your multimedia. It acts like you can literally pick the mouse up and push the buttons that are preset to control your media player and point it right at the computer. So you could be sitting in a chair with your mouse next to you and control your tunes, whether you want to change the music, up the volume, down the volume, and just sit back and relax. You have a capable of a zoom in and zoom out feature. So if you get to a particular page and say that, you know, especially on email, so some folks have their email print set so low, you can with just a click zoom quick in and magnify the text on the screen. So it gives you a lot of features, and it's all cordless. So, you know, you don't have those cords floating around on the desktop and that. And this mouse can be had from anywhere from $34 to $49, depending on where you shop around. Of course, and if you do a search on the internet.
Different colors, too.
Oh, yeah. They've got two different colors, a red and a black, and I think it's a blue, black, and a gray combination. But it's really a neat one. Go check it out. It shows you. They even have a little demo that'll show you all the features and the buttons and configurations. I mean, I use a mouse right now that has a lot of buttons on it for so I can, instead of having to constantly go up to the corner of the page to go back on a website, I just hit a button on the left-hand side of my mouse, and it just takes me back as many pages as I keep clicking.
A multi-button mouse can be pretty confusing to new users, but once you get used to those
once
other
you get used
buttons,
to it, it's like, wait a minute, that's the problem I have. I go down to the shop area, and I just got standard scroll mouses there. It's like, wait a minute, there's no button here to click backwards because I get so used to the one upstairs.
Scroll wheels, I can't live without them.
Oh,
love them.
I just replaced two more on my bench. Because I don't know how they got switched out, but scroll, I'm just...
Yep.
I've been playing with Apple's new Mighty Mouse that has a scroll ball on it. Mm. So it's like a little miniature trackball. You can go left, right, up, down, diagonally. It's really pretty slick.
It does work on Windows, too. The one issue I have with the Mighty Mouse is why was it not wireless?
Well, that's next, so they can charge you more as a new product.
Yeah, I guess. But this Logitech mouse, if you're looking for a Christmas idea... You definitely might want to keep this in the back of your mind, because even if you have a mouse now, I mean, never hurts to have another one around.
I thought it was neat when I found a mouse that had a media card reader built into it, so you could take your camera card, plug it into the mouse, and not have a second box on your desk for your media cards.
It's got to be so slow, though.
Well, USB 2.
Yeah.
It, not necessarily.
Wired. But there's so many of the card readers. I mean, the 9-in-1, and so that you can get a faceplate that hooks right into the PC, and it's right there.
It's just one of your front 5 1/4 bays that no one uses anymore.
Or an external one that can sit right on the
desktop. All right, we have to take a break. Jeez and crackers. When we come back, patches on top of patches on top of patches. Microsoft's upgrades are starting to look like that comfy sweater my wife keeps trying to throw away. More about this after the break when we come back with Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Now back to Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Andrew Welch.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. I'm very impressed by that. Rob knew what name he was working under today. I hope you folks are sitting down. There's yet another patch out from Microsoft. Microsoft had this problem with Windows, and of course, they created a patch for it. Which
patch is that patch?
Fix the problem. This is the one that should have been out in September, and they held back until October.
The patch to fix the patch?
Well, the patch didn't work, so they created a new patch for the patch, which apparently still doesn't fix it. Now there's a patch for the patch for the patch. So you want to make sure that you're up to date, assuming they're even going to put it out before, you know, the November patch thing comes out. So here are my questions to you. First, how many times do we have to go through this before Microsoft admits that their process is irrevocably broken? And how long are we all going to stand for shoddy workmanship? And how long are we going to stand for the fact that patches only come out once a month when we need them now?
Yeah.
That's the one that really, really bothers me. Now, I admit that I'm spoiled on the Linux side when patches come out within hours of a problem being noticed.
And there aren't that many of them.
Well, and there aren't that many, but even, you know, even for the serious ones, within a couple hours, there's a patch out.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you from a development point of view, okay, you're running into two problems that are at opposition to each other. One is you want it quick, okay? The other is you want it to work immediately and not have to go back and have it refixed again, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you can't really have both. I mean, on the Linux side, sure, they roll out the patches immediately, but a lot of times they have to go, oh, wow, we screwed up. Here's another patch.
Yeah, I've never had that. You know? I got to be honest with you, I've never had that. They roll it out, and then I wait for the beta people to download it and play with it. Right. That's why it takes me a couple hours to get a working, clean patch.
Right. Well, I mean, the real issue is to do any kind of real quality assurance on a product, it really does take time, especially when you're dealing with such a huge range of variables.
Yeah, the old adage, you can have it cheap, fast, or good. Pick two.
Right.
But, I mean, I agree with you. I think that clearly the model they're using with Windows is kind of a little bit broken down. And Microsoft agrees, too. That's why they're starting with a clean slate and coming out with Longhorn, you know, whenever it comes out.
Yeah, right.
But they also have the issue of they have so many people they even have people still running Windows 95. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
And they have to continue to support these people in the.
But they have stated they're not supporting them. They're not supporting 95. They're not supporting 98.
ME is gone.
ME, thank God, is gone. Yeah. 2000 is on its way out.
But they still do have support contracts, but possibly not.
You can
with the
buy
public.
A support contract,
right?
But it's limited.
Right. But they still have to do some kind of development to fix certain issues on these operating systems.
They've already said that there's a whole bunch of security patches they're not going to port down anymore. They're not going to backport them. You just can't get them anymore.
And if you read the
contract for Windows 95 support, it basically says, yeah, maybe, maybe not. Right. Good luck. Right. That's basically what it says.
Yeah.
I think they really have to do that, though.
Yeah, they have to. No, I don't. I completely grant you with that. My problem is having to wait a month, and in the case of the September patches, 2 months.
Right.
To get a patch for a known problem, which you know that the crackers are exploiting right now.
Right. And how many
times? That's the thing that I don't like. Now, I grant you, they need to work to make sure it's clean. They need to work to make sure it's easy to install.
And then
when I get it, I need to work to make sure it's going to work right in my environment. I get all that.
Right, that's
but
the
I
problem.
Don't want to have to wait 2 months for that.
How many times have you installed a patch that's broken your computer?
Right.
Because they're trying to rush the patches.
They have not rushed the patches. The patches they only come out once a month on Black Tuesday. Right. That's the only time their patches come out, and they still are broken.
But the thing of it is, though, and not to defend them either, is, you know, when they do a patch, you know, if it's just a basic software patch, that's one thing. But with the variables now, the video cards and the motherboards and yada, 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 they're fighting a lot more variables. Not to defend them, but they are fighting a lot more.
Well, yes, and that, but now the Linux people have that. But I was about to say the Mac people haven't had that problem, and they're about to get it.
Yeah.
But the Linux people have had that problem, and they've pretty well solved it. So it's an interesting problem, and I just don't have an answer. And I'm
too many programmers at Microsoft, maybe.
Well, from a development point of view, especially when you're talking about security issues, you got to be real diligent about checking those out to make sure you haven't introduced a new security problem when you're fixing an old one.
Yes,
for what it's worth.
Yes, I absolutely agree. All right, listen, we're going to take a break. Look, we've got a whole team of people in to read the news now. I'm very excited about this. It's more than just one person. It's a team reading the news. And maybe they'll do it in harmony. That'll be kind of nice. But when we come back, we're going to talk about phone calls over the internet. How secure are they? We'll talk about that. We'll talk about a bunch of other things. I promise we'll get to your calls. We've got Tony and Heath and Rich on the line. Stay on the line. We'll get to you when we come back. With a whole lot more of the greatest computer show in the known universe with Steve Ray, Dave Enright, Andrew Welch from Ambrosia Software, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and we're going to talk to all of you on the greatest computer show on the known universe, on the greatest radio station in the known universe. That's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
To America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180. The Choice One toll free line at 1-800-295-1180 or *1180. A free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Back to the...
Notice how extra careful he's being now?
You're just amused by saying your own name now, aren't you?
Well, you know, I say my name on the radio about 8 million times in a given week, and it's just like I get to Sunday, and I'm all set with it. You know what I mean? It's just like, I don't want to hear it anymore.
You just pulled the camera. Turn it this way a little.
You and your camera.
All right, we're gonna get back to the phones in just 1 minute. But first, I want to talk about a product called Skype, SKYPE. It lets you make free phone calls over the internet to another Skype box. Unfortunately, for those of you who are, and a lot of people have begun using it so that they can make free long distance phone calls. Mm-hmm. I think we have faculty members with family overseas, mm-hmm. and they use it a lot. If you're using Skype, there's a hole in it. That could either let it crash your system or let someone take it over. Nice choice.
No, great.
Huh?
Lovely.
So if you're using Skype, I just want you to know you need to update now.
And that's... In other words, they could take over and make calls on your system?
No, they could just take over your machine and then use it to send out spam or whatever they want. I mean, they can use it to make calls. They can do anything they want.
Right, and that brings up another issue that's been around for years about privacy with cell phones and voice over IP.
Right.
Anyone with a $20 scanner you can buy at a local electronics store can listen to your cell phone conversations.
I can do that to any voice over IP connection right now with two simple products. I can gather all the data coming over the net. Pull out all the VoIP traffic, recompile the VoIP traffic into VoIP is VoIP, voice over IP. Recompile it into an intelligible conversation and save it as a WAV file and play it on my iPod.
Yeah, the portable
free products.
The portable phones we've been using for years. You know, it's a radio between your phone and the base station. If your neighbor happens to have the same brand phone or running on the same frequency, you can hear his calls. They can hear yours.
Yep. Well, one big security issue that I see all the time is people are running. They buy a wireless router. And they're using wireless at home, and they do not turn on any kind of encryption.
Yeah.
We were at a developers conference where they had wireless set up, and a guy wrote a little program that what it did is it looked at what the traffic was that was going on the waves, and anytime it saw an image, it put the image up on the screen. So this guy was giving a speech, and he said, this is this little demo that I rigged up, and everything that everyone was surfing, including some pictures that probably they didn't want seen, was going up on the screen. And people just don't realize that if they set up their own wireless internet connection, anyone can use it. And in fact, one of our employees just moved to a new apartment. He didn't even bother to get an internet connection for a couple months because he was hijacking off of the neighbors.
Sure.
Because it was open.
Sure.
And which, you know, okay, he's using it semi-benevolently. It's still not right. But if someone wanted to hijack your computer, it's a really easy way in.
Well, so if you're in an apartment house and you've got wireless,
mm-hmm.
and I'm in the next apartment and I'm surfing child porn.
Yep.
You get caught.
Yep, absolutely. And people don't realize, even a few houses over, people will get your signal. So please turn on encryption if you have a wireless router. Please.
See, most of the wireless setups now, D-Link and Linksys and Apple's own wireless routers, they talk you through turning on encryption and setting a password.
Yep. Yep.
Right.
For heaven's sakes, remember your password.
That's the hard part.
We've had customers that will buy a second computer and want to get on the wireless network. Well, what's your password? I don't know.
I don't have anything.
Yeah, then you can't get on.
Yeah, as long as
you got a manual, unwrap the manual and write the password inside the front cover. Since nobody ever looks in the manual, nobody will think it's in there.
It's a safe place. It is.
Well, I'm just glad they're actually using a password because most of the people that I know just haven't even bothered to even do that, which is really
unfortunate. Well, I've told this story before, but I'm getting my master's degree at RIT. Why wait till the last minute? And one of the classes I was in, the group met at my house to write a paper, a group paper. And they all sat down, they opened up their laptops, and one guy said, "Wait a minute, you have unencrypted wireless?" I said, "While you're here, I do, yeah." Because I didn't want to go through changing the password, giving everybody that password, changing again. So I unencrypted it while they were there. Right. When they left, I figured they were there, 2 hours?
And you created your own network segment so they couldn't see the rest of your traffic.
Exactly. And when they left, I set it back to one network and re-encrypted it. So we were all good.
See, that's got to be a little weird for you, going to school, taking classes, and teaching classes. Have you ever gone where one period you're the student and the next period you're the teacher?
Yes, it's very confusing. What I do is I find myself when we're doing online stuff, I sometimes find myself answering other people's questions as if I were the teacher, and then stop and say,
I'm the student.
You're on class.
Right, I got to change my head around here.
You need a big red sign on the top of your notebook or your computer. Student, teacher.
around like clean and dirty. Right.
As a sort of a related note and a little plug for us, one of the products we have is a video capture product. Basically, it will record as a movie, anything that you do on your computer, and RIT in their computer graphic design department is now using that to create electronic syllabuses.
Yeah.
In other words, to show people how to use Flash, they record the lesson plan, put it on the server for the students, and instead of a printed piece of paper, they actually have a video that they can stop, pause, rewind, go back and forth, and use. So that's one of the products we have.
Is that PC or Mac only?
That's Mac only.
Okay. That's very nifty.
But the video will play on anything.
Right.
So of course it doesn't make a difference.
Of course it will. Yeah, absolutely. All right, listen, we're going to go to the phones now, and we're going to talk to Tony from Pittsford, New York, patiently waiting on the line. Welcome, Tony. What's your question?
Nice segue. Has a video issue.
Has a video issue.
It's not
wonderful.
My fault.
How do you guys do that?
It's magic.
It's magic. My video has died. My screen is blank. It's black, I should say.
Yep.
And it slowly degraded from magenta pixels getting larger and larger, and then when blank. Is it my video card? Is it my monitor?
What color is the, when you turn the monitor on, do you get an orange light or a green?
It's green, and then about 3 seconds later goes to orange.
Mm-hmm.
10-to-1 odds. Do you have another monitor that you could possibly test?
No, of course not.
Do you? Well, here you need to do one of two things.
Find a neighbor that has another monitor you can test with.
Either a friend with another monitor or a friend with a laptop who can bring it over and plug it into your monitor.
Okay,
but
I'd
lean toward the computer since the monitor is sensing. You know, the green light means the monitor's coming.
Yeah, but he's getting the fading of colors and everything else, which tells me that might be the monitor
itself.
Because I just had a client bring in a laptop, and the same thing. If you hook it to the external, the display works fine, but the colors have slowly been degrading on him. He's been cranking up the brightness, and it just doesn't work anymore because the display's going.
They weren't degrading. They were just, I was just getting large magenta.
Okay. That actually goes to my monitor tube. One of the best things that anyone can do with their monitor, don't shove it up against the wall. You put it on the back of your desk, you shove it up against the wall.
Right.
The cords in the back of the monitor then get kinked and they have a real hard 90-degree turn coming out of the back of the monitor going down to your computer. over time, those little wires in there will start fraying and breaking. And so you might lose your red gun, and just the green and blue will run for a while.
Yep.
Or if you lose too many guns, and then everything looks really weird.
Or
if you lose one of the sense pins, then your computer doesn't know what kind of monitor you have. So make sure that the cable in the back of the monitor and
but
the back of the
case,
computer.
But in your case, you need to try those two things, Tony. You need to either find somebody with a laptop to check. Either one will tell you where the problem is. Either another monitor or a friend with a laptop who can plug it into your monitor. But that's what you need to do. Our next caller, Heath from Victor, New York. Welcome, Heath. What's your question?
Hey, guys. Love the show. And I've got two questions, an easy one and a hard one. Which one do you want first?
Easy.
I changed routers. I went from a 54G to the 108 wireless router. And I've been running Thunderbird and Firefox successfully for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Switched over, rebooted the system, you know, did the whole sequence bit, picked up my internet connection, no problem. However, I couldn't get Thunderbird to connect to the POP server, no matter what I tried.
In Thunderbird, did you have a proxy set?
No.
What does it say in the new router about setting up for mail? Is the mail... is the mail port blocked?
That I couldn't tell you. Would I find that in the router settings area?
Yeah.
Okay, that's definitely what I'll check then.
Well, yeah, they pack this thing in with the router nowadays. It's called a manual. And it's made out of paper.
Not always. It's a PDF on the CD.
Yeah. Or it's a PDF on the CD.
That's where I wrote all my passwords.
Yeah, there you go. The place you write all your passwords.
Yep.
So if you take a look in the manual, there is a whole, there almost always, at least on most routers, is a whole section on setting up mail either with or without a proxy, and that'll help tell you whether or not anything is set up.
All right. Because
Firefox works, right?
Well, yeah, it does. But listen to the problem that I gained in trying to correct it. I thought, okay, well, I'll just download the newest version of Thunderbird and just do a reinstall, see if that solves my problem.
Sure.
Did that, and at the end of the install, it said, do you want to go ahead and launch Thunderbird? I said, yes. Nothing happened. And every time I try and go and run the program now, it says that it didn't finish properly, and it's finishing the install.
Have you run a Security Tango?
Yeah, I did. I have. I do it fairly frequently.
Because I know that's okay with all the updated stuff. Because I know that there is, in fact, a problem with a couple of different viruses.
Yeah.
That if they've locked, that they try to lock Thunderbird.
Really?
And if they do that and you try to update, of course you can't.
Yeah.
So you need, well, make sure you're running the latest set of instructions. Oh, also for everybody, I should let you know, I had a lady complain to me last night via email that it was hard to print out the Security Tango because of all the graphics that are on the page. So now when you go to print it, the graphics are gone.
Oh, cool.
So that actually makes it, you print it out in fewer pages now. But I would try that, Heath, and that could, in fact, solve all your little problems.
I would also caution everyone that the wireless 108 isn't a standard yet.
Right.
The wireless G standard is 54 megabit, so there's several different ways to make it faster. There's the GS, the GX, the N. There's no official standard yet, so depending on your router and the cards in your computer, it just may be not talking to each other properly.
Right.
And while we're warning folks, though, just for tickles and grins, I've been using Netscape 7.2.
Yes, you have.
And I tried, I'm on my test bench because I always like to do it in a test mode before going over to the product. Netscape came out with version 8.0.4. They're getting like the Mac people. That's scary.
They always were on the PC. They just hid those subversion numbers so you never knew if you
had
the latest
version. Give me 8.4. The heck with that extra zero. Anyways, I tried it on my test bench. And folks, don't do it. The product worked great as far as, you know, you install it. It was very smooth, and it brought all over all my bookmarks. Now, I also had an email account set up on this test bench. The stupid thing didn't bring it over.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's why I'm very seriously thinking for that test bench here, going back down to the Firefox and Thunderbird.
Thunderbird! I mean, it's not down, it's an up!
Thunderbird literally will ask you, oh, you've got these different email accounts. Do you want to bring them over? And you say, yeah. And it does
done.
It.
You're well, done.
Netscape, hello. They missed it in version 7.
Yeah.
I had to spend just about an all-nighter again trying to get my emails back and set up into that, and that's why I didn't touch it. And now they go to 8, and it doesn't even bring over your emails where Thunderbird does. Forget it. I'm going to
Thunderbird and Firefox.
Different.
Those are the products you want to use.
It's people who have different workflows. Some people like one program that does everything. And so Netscape does mail and news.
That's
and
why I liked it. Yeah.
And some people want separate programs that do other their one thing really well. So
right.
That's Thunderbird
and
Firefox.
Also, within the Firefox, you know how you can sit there and create a bunch of bookmarks. And I could have that up at the top to load all my bookmarks. Well, with Firefox, you got to go over to the bookmarks and then scroll down to that final tab to load all of them.
Right.
It's another couple steps, but I guess I could live with that. But, man, that stinks.
It stinks. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, of course, we've got Chris and Mike and Joe on the line. And we're also going to, you know, in keeping with Halloween, we're going to talk about zombies taking over the internet. Who are you going to call? Microsoft, apparently. How odd is that? Join us when we come back in a discussion of security and an unlikely new hero with Dave and Steve and Andrew and Rob and Nick on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Wow. Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Andrew Welch.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. A group of spammers are using zombie computers, computers that have been taken over and programmed to automatically send out spam, those are called zombies, to send out tens of thousands of spam messages per second. In fact, it's gotten so bad, even Microsoft finally noticed it.
How long did that take?
Well, yeah, they did a... they set up a honeypot, a system that lets itself be taken over to do these things. And they discovered that they were sending out, you know, what is it, 18,000 messages or
18 million messages in the first week.
Yeah, 18 million messages
in
a week.
And then you multiply that by the tens of thousands of zombie computers all over the internet.
Right, that's one machine sending out 18 million messages in a week.
And this is why people should be so concerned about, they really should keep up with the security updates. Because it creates a problem for everyone.
And more than half of the spam currently being sent out originates from zombies. The interesting part of this is that Microsoft traced these things back and discovered that a significant number of them are, in fact, based in the United States.
Oh, sure.
So what they're doing is suing them. Now, we've talked before about how lawsuits... Well, but wait a minute now. We've talked about how lawsuits don't work because it's the World Wide Web. However, I believe that it'll work against the people in the United States.
Oh, yes, definitely. There they got a tool they can go after.
Yeah, but the problem is you find the zombie computer. That doesn't help.
No. I'm not talking about the computer. I'm talking about where it came from. They traced back because they set up the honeypot, so they got...
They got nailed.
They got caught, and when a zombie computer sets itself up to send out spam, it's got to get that spam from somewhere.
Yep.
And
they
found all of that stuff. Yep. So they did all the backtracking, and now they're going out and suing all of these people. And you know what? I give them kudos.
Mm-hmm.
I say whatever they can do to cut down on the spam problem.
At least a better
email program would be really nice. But hey, as long as they're going to do something, it's better this than nothing.
Yeah, well, you got to face the facts, and like you say, you got to grab them where you can and stop what you can, and it just helps relieve it somewhat.
But certainly, I mean, these people will move offshore in a heartbeat if they need to or have to. So,
yeah, but they've already committed.
The problem is these
people have already committed a crime in the United States, so they can be
prosecuted. People, you know, let's say you shut down a lot of the spammers who are actually in the U.S., they'll just do it from outside the U.S.
Right?
And yeah, just go offshore.
It's also somewhat of a demand thing. You know, as long as advertisers get enough people that read these things and respond to them, they're going to try and do it one way or another.
Well, it used to be you needed, a 1% or 2% return to send out, you know, junk mail.
Postal
now,
junk mail,
one response and you've actually made money.
Well, that's
most
the problem.
Of the spam, most of the spam isn't legitimate companies doing legitimate direct marketing.
But that's just it, is that there is no real cost for the company to do this. They can barrage the entire internet with emails about, you know, some Viagra ripoff product or whatever it may be.
Right.
And the cost of doing that is almost nil, which is why you're seeing so much of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so now what we're saying is, in fact, this is pretty much a who cares answer, and what we really need is Microsoft to start writing an email client that...
It's more fundamental
than
that.
And how long have you been running this fever?
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's more fundamental than that in terms of...
You want me to slap you and wake you up?
I've been sick.
Yeah, I guess so.
No, it's more fundamental than that in that the entire, client-server way that the mail system works right now, it was really nice when they were first designing the internet in terms of being an open system. Anyone could talk to anyone else, but there are so many loopholes and ways for spammers to exploit it that it's ridiculous. What's really needed is a better technical basis to do this. And it's unfortunate, but it needs to be done.
I think you're right. And I it's interesting. I have a friend who will only accept... His filter is set up so that if you don't put a secret word in the subject... Mm-hmm. It dumps it.
Yeah.
So he only gets me. Now, I wish I could do that. God forbid I did that.
You and I can't
right,
do that.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But he's got a half a dozen people that he talks to, and he tells them you have to put, X word in the subject or I'll never see it.
Yep.
And he's perfectly happy
with
that.
Well, the easiest filter the average user can put, and by filter, it's a function in your email program that says if you get a message with Viagra in the subject, delete it.
Right.
The easiest filter you can do is say if you're not in my address book, delete it.
Right.
And that's a very simple filter. You can do in Outlook, you can do in Eudora, you can do in any
other
program.
And if somebody, and if I go to you and say, oh, Andrew, I'd like to exchange email with you. What's your email address?
Yep.
Oh, it's Andrew, yada, yada, ambrosoftware.com. Yep. AmbrosiaSoftware.com. But now I can go home and I can say, okay, I'm putting Andrew at AmbrosiaSoftware.com. I can't say that for some reason. In my email, and then when he sends me mail, it'll already be there. So I have to do a little something, but not much.
Well, there are two problems. One is that spammers are savvy enough that they're able to actually get at people's address books.
Yes.
So that creates a problem. And they can also make it look like the message came from yourself. So, of course, you're going to be in your address book. But... the other issue is there are lots of people like you and myself that we have to get email from people we don't know.
Yeah, right.
You know, and there's just no way around that.
Yeah, it's an interesting problem. But we'll keep you in touch with any new things that are going on like that. But in the meantime, we're going to talk to Chris from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Chris. What's your question?
Thanks, Nick. Hi, guys.
Hello.
I have a PC that was built for me by Soyata.
Mm-hmm.
It's running Windows XP Home Edition.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition, I had them put on Norton Antivirus and Zone Alarm. Mm-hmm. Or I actually downloaded Zone Alarm as a personal firewall. Of course, I'm getting update reminders from Microsoft about that. And I thought I remembered something about the fact that Windows updates are a problem if you are running a personal firewall at home. Is it as simple as just simply turning off the firewall before you download the updates? Or
well, you just want to turn off the Microsoft firewall.
I'm sorry?
You just want to turn off the Microsoft firewall.
Okay. And tell
you need one firewall.
Yeah.
And frankly, we think Zone Alarm is better.
Right.
I had one client with three of them on.
Yeah, that can cause a problem.
Yeah.
But you definitely only need the one, and Zone Alarm is fine. Once Zone Alarm is running, the first time you go to do an update, the system, Zone Alarm will say, oh, such and so is trying to get to the internet. Do you want to allow that? Say yes, and remember this. And then from now on, updates will work just fine.
And if he's getting that pop-up, what you can do is in the control panel, you'll see an icon that says firewall. If you double-click on that, it opens it up. Down in the bottom part of that screen is a little box that says, I want to handle this myself. I'm aware of it. Don't bother me anymore. You click that, and you won't get that warning anymore.
Right. Exactly.
The danger with that is that you have to know what that little pop-up says. You know, if it pops up and says Firefox wants to get to the internet, okay, that's good. If it comes up and says Run DLL wants to get to the internet, you may not know what that means.
Well,
that's
part of the problem.
Yeah.
Exactly. It doesn't tell you what program wants to go. It tells you what little tiny bit of code wants to go.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a problem. I agree. Our next caller is Mike on a cell phone. Mike, you're pulled over to the side of the road, right?
Actually, no. I'm around Dunkirk, New York right now.
Ah, good old Dunkirk.
Driving back to Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Just past Fredonia.
Yeah. Actually, I just want to say before I ask the question, hello, Dave Enright. I used to work at Channel 13 doing the weather back about 10 years ago.
Oh, hello there. How you doing?
Mike Brookins, good.
Yeah.
I'm actually back in Syracuse now doing the weather there.
Good for you.
Great. Congratulations.
Yeah, so I'm driving back to Pittsburgh to visit my wife. Anyways, the question I have is my wife, she does legal work on the computer at home, and she needs to use a program that uses dual monitors. So one's a preview to look at a document, and the other monitors used to run the program.
Yep.
I don't have a second monitor just yet. I'm going to go out and buy one. Do I need a special card to put in my computer?
Yeah, you're going to want to you're going to want a dual channel video card that you can literally, you know, slide from one to the other.
Yeah, there's two ways to do it. You can get a second video card for one of your PCI slots. And but that's a little trickier. An easier way is to remove your existing single card and put a dual card in.
And then that way switching back and forth is so smooth, it's unbelievable, Mike.
And can you use Windows XP, or do I have to get...
No, you can use XP.
Like, you have to use XP. Anything older doesn't support multiple monitors.
Yeah. Now,
well,
the other thing to check out is look in, again, the manual. I've mentioned that dirty word twice in one show. Look in the manual for this specialized software and see if it requires a specific video card.
Yeah.
That's an important piece of this, because if you don't do that, you may end up buying something you can't use. So definitely do that, but in general, any multi-head card, that's what they call one with with more than one connector in it. And then in terms of the monitor, you're best off making sure that both monitors are the same resolution. So if one is 1024 by 768, make sure
be.
The other one does the same.
And more importantly, the same frequency.
Right.
If one's at 80 hertz, make the other one 80 hertz.
Yeah. Right. Make sure those match, otherwise you're going to have all kinds of trouble. Our next caller is Joe, and Joe, we're holding down. We're holding down, Dave. Go ahead, Joe from Fairport, New York. What's your question?
Hey guys, I've got an old PC that I use as a backup. It's got Windows. It had Windows ME on it, and it worked fine. The
it
few
had?
Times that I had to use it as a backup, my son recently tried to put Windows 2000 on it, and you probably heard the noise when I found out it was all screwed up. I'm just trying to... Well, my question is, how do I get ME back on that box?
You need to have the original... I'm going to answer this because Dave is too busy chipping enamel off his teeth right now, grinding them. If you really want ME back on again, and I don't think that's a good idea, but if that's what you want, then you need the original CD to do that.
And I've got that.
What may be the bigger annoyance is that during the 2000 installation, it probably converted your hard drive to NTFS.
Yep. Uh-huh.
So you're going to have to erase your hard drive, convert it back to FAT32 so ME can recognize it.
Yep.
And can I do that here? Can I erase it here, or have I got to have somebody do that?
Well, you're going to have to use a boot disk and literally F disk the drive.
Well, doesn't the install give you the option of doing that at some point?
Not in ME.
No, not in ME. Yeah, you've got to have
can't even say the word.
Don't do it.
You got to have a boot disk so you can F disk the drive to get rid of the NTFS partition.
Your best choice at this point, Joe, is to take it to a vendor. Bring your machine and bring your ME disk with you and have them put it back on again. Hopefully they won't charge you a whole lot extra to put that operating system back on.
No, that should only be like an hour and a half.
You I'm talking about because of what they're doing, putting ME on it.
You make
well,
a pact with the devil.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You know, and getting the updates and that's the critical thing. Once you get it on, is getting all the patches and everything else to get it back up.
Right. And that's annoyingly time-consuming.
Yeah.
You click OK, come back in an hour. Click OK, come back in an hour.
Well, right. And that's why it's nice they can put it on their bench and do other things while they're working.
Well, that's
what
we do. Yeah.
And there's that whole thing about sacrificing a chicken to make sure. Yeah.
Well, exactly. And you have to make sure the monitor is facing.
It gets so messy.
It used to be SCSI voodoo. Now it's ME voodoo.
It's definitely ME voodoo. Once you've sold your soul to the devil to run ME, then you're...
I got a lot of scratch marks up and down my driveway.
From?
Working, you know, they come in with the ME.
Yeah.
And I just sit there and drag them up and down the street, you know, down the driveway.
The people, you mean?
No, the machines.
Oh,
the people sit there and watch.
Right.
That's how I fix them.
All right, our next caller is Bill. Bill, where are you calling from?
Rochester,
what's your question?
I've got a, so do you have the brand name?
No.
Okay, it's a media machine with XP Professional on it, Media Center.
Yeah.
And the problem I have is when I go to shut the machine down, it takes about 6 minutes to shut it off.
Oh, sure.
Is that normal?
Well, the problem is the Media Center server thing that Microsoft has put out does an amazing number of connections to the internet, to all of the various pieces and parts in the machine. And when it shuts down, it's got to check certain files. It's got to make sure certain things are closed. It's got to close certain connections to the internet. One of the things that it does, of course, with the media center is that it checks to see that everything on your system is legal. And it may take a while to shut that particular service down. So, yeah, it can take a while to shut down any of your media services.
And not just that. Any other software that he's loaded.
Right.
If that's also in the taskbar, I mean, if you go into MS Config, you might want to look at some of that stuff. Because if you got, say, Microsoft Messenger being loaded, Jukebox being loaded, QuickTime being loaded, a lot of the stuff that you can clean out to help reduce the shutdown time on stuff that you really don't need.
Right.
Or if you got AOL that's being loaded.
Right.
And Instant Messenger.
Or on the other hand, just don't shut it down.
Yeah, that was what that was the other point I was going to bring up.
Yeah.
But the important...
Put it to sleep.
Yeah. Right, just put it to sleep.
Why shut it down?
Yes, exactly.
Then you have to worry about it waking up.
If it's strictly... And here's the other problem. If it's a media center and you're using it for a media center, you don't ever need to shut it down.
Yeah.
If you're actually using it as a computer and once in a while playing a song on it, that's kind of a waste of a whole lot of resources, and that's probably the cause of his problem, all those other pieces of software that are on it.
Yeah.
But in addition, Bill, absolutely make sure you've run the Security Tango. Just because it's a media center doesn't mean it can't pick up a virus. So make sure that you've done that. Our next caller is Mark on a cell phone. Mark, are you there?
I didn't finish my question.
Oh, who's this?
Bill yet.
Oh, no, Bill, no. Sorry.
Part two of the question.
Go ahead.
Part two is that when I'm watching or trying to do a TV recording, a video recording.
Yeah.
Off of a cable.
Yeah, yeah.
It takes like about 6 minutes to set that up, and these two problems seem to be related.
All right. Well, now, the other thing to look at is the specs in your machine. How fast is it? How much memory do you have in it? And how
at least a gig of memory.
Well, yeah, take a look at the specs in the media center setup. It probably says you need 256 meg of RAM. That's a lie. You need at least twice that, and a gig would be better.
Yep.
The processor probably says you need 500 megahertz. That's a lie. You should at least have 800 megahertz, if not a gig. The size of your machine is very important. The size of the hard drive is very important.
Especially for recording video.
One of the things that it's going to do is to make sure it has enough space. And if your hard drive is too small, it's got to do a lot of internal
caching.
Defragging and a lot of caching to make sure that that happens.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to check out all of those things. And again, it really does sound like you may have a virus. So I would suggest running the Security Tango on that system. Now, finally, we get to Mark. Sorry, Mark, on a cell phone. You have a question about Ambrosia?
I got a question about Ambrosia.
Excellent. Uh-oh. Andrew is here to answer your question.
Hey, no, this is I'm sitting here on my garden tractor mowing my lawn, hopefully for the last time this year.
Nice.
About ready to commence picking up leaves. But I don't have a chance to get to the Ambrosia software site, so I'm going to shill for Ambrosia here. Andrew, what's the latest products you got out for the Mac?
See, I was going to get to that in the next segment, but this is fine. Go for it.
Well, I mentioned it earlier. We've got that video recording product, Snaps Pro X, which is being used for all sorts of things for, from recording the syllabus that
I
mentioned.
You know what? Hold on. We're going to take a break. When we come back, you get to tell us all about whatever.
I get to shill when we come back?
You get to shill when we come back to answer Mark's question. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Andrew Welsh, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
It's Soundbites with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Andrew Welsh.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. We have Chuck. Chuck on the phone from Batavia, New York. Welcome, Chuck. What's your question?
Okay, my question's regarding Thunderbird.
Yeah.
I put it on a new notebook, and it brings down everything from my Exchange server except for the subfolders under Inbox.
You have to, not register, you subscribe. You have to subscribe to them individually. So if you go into Thunderbird and look under the subscribe setup, it'll actually show you everything on your system, including things like .trash and, everything. And just pick the ones that are actually your subfolders.
Okay.
And register, subscribe to
those.
All right. I just haven't had time to even begin to look for it. We're migrating from an HP Unix system over to Microsoft SQL.
Oh, sure. Well, it's going to take a little bit of time for you. But that's the way to do it. And I don't have it booted up and running here, but there is a section that lets you subscribe to subfolders, and you just have to look for that.
You also have to make sure on the Exchange server all the IMAP is set up to publish those proprietary Exchange folders out to the IMAP server.
Right. It can be done, but it has to be done, and that has to be done by your
administrator. Admin.
Well, then make sure you did that. And you're on your way. Good luck, Chuck.
And that's a big issue with a lot of corporate users who have typically been doing Exchange Mail and trying to move away from the Microsoft proprietary client server software and going to generic stuff.
Right. And now we need to go back to Andrew. I apologize. I just jumped to a phone call because my brain is not at all working right.
No big deal. You
were going to tell us about your new software for Macs, PCs, pretty much everything you do.
Yeah, basically we've got three products that might interest people. We've got our Snaps Pro X product, which basically acts like a video camera for your screen. So anything that's on the screen, it will record. And people are familiar with taking a screenshot of your screen. It works the same way, except it records it as a movie. And it will record the sound and microphone. And people use it for all sorts of things, including remote tech support. You know, some people want to know how to do something. You can record a video of it or... as I mentioned before, someone's using it for a syllabus for their students, things
right.
like that. And we also have an analogous product called Wiretap, which is used for recording audio. And it will record audio streams from programs like this that are being broadcast on the internet. It also will record any audio from any product that's running on your computer, DVD snippets, whatever. And it will also record any line in. You know, people use it for, you could record this broadcast if you wanted to. It'll work for that. And we also have that free Easy Envelopes product. And unlike a lot of free software, there's no spyware, there's no nothing, there's no catch, there's no advertising. It's just a nice, cool, free product. You basically hit a key to bring up dashboard. And you've got a nice envelope-looking widget sitting there. And you can either look for addresses in your address book, or you can just paste one in, you hit print, and you've got an envelope. Just trying to make everyday things that people do really simple and easy to take care of. I'm done shilling.
That's a good thing. That's a very good thing.
It's useful software.
Mm-hmm. It's very useful software. But you also have games and everything else, and it's all available up there. You've got utilities and games and
handmade in Rochester, New York.
In Rochester, New York, and that
I think a local company.
I think that is a big thing. You guys are a well-known and well-respected software company,
and several of their products have been bundled on Macintosh. Over the years,
right.
by Apple.
And you're right here in Rochester,
handmade
right here in Rochester, New York.
Mm-hmm.
And don't you forget it. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got Ron on the line. We've got all kinds of interesting stuff to talk about. And in fact, the most enviable part of Star Trek was the fact that nothing ever needed to be plugged in. Join us after the break, and we'll talk about how close we're coming to doing that with our PCs when we come back. With Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Andrew Welch, Rob Linton, and me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Wham! Online, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. See? You put it down, the server's down, people are getting back online. Am I up?
Yeah, you should be back there.
Yeah, we're reconnected. Okay. Rob disconnected us from the internet for just a moment.
It's not my, whatever.
Yeah. Blame it on Rob.
And Andrew's
I didn't say
to
you
fix,
did it on purpose.
Andrew's trying to fix something on his server, and everything went nuts, and he went out to go yell at his tech guy, and it wasn't him.
May not have been him. That's right. That's exactly it. All right, but we're back, and we're going to talk to Ron from Webster, New York. Welcome, Ron. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Great show. Thanks for all your help.
Thank you.
I want to become a regular user of the Security Tango.
You should.
I've gotten into safe mode, and I can't find SpyBot and Stinger in there to run it.
You
I don't
downloaded
want to miss them. No steps.
You downloaded and installed them?
They're in my computer. I have a little folder of computer scans where I have all that stuff. And how do you enable in safe mode access?
Well, wait a minute. The only reason you have to run those is in safe mode is if they lock up on you when you're in regular mode. In other words, if you're running Adware and you go through it and it finds a bunch of it and it locks up when it tries to remove it, that's when you've got to run it in safe mode. Otherwise,
which will likely happen if you haven't run the Tango in a long time.
Okay. I was lucky. I ran the stuff and I was in good shape, and I just was following step three, reboot into safe mode.
The issue is that with I assume you're running Windows XP.
Yes.
With Windows XP, when you boot into safe mode, you actually log into the administrator account, not your normal account that you log into. So all of your desktop items and all of your program groups are not loaded into the administrator.
Although Adware should be.
Should be. And that goes back to a question you get asked when you load Adware and SpyBot. Do you want this program to be available to all users or just this user?
Okay.
So you may have to go manually onto the C drive into program files and find those folders.
And then create an icon and put it out on the desktop. If you find, say, Adware within the LavaSoft folder, you can right-click on it and then say Send To, and one of the options is Desktop Shortcut. But like I say, for the most part, and I mean, I do this day in, day out, 6 days a week, I found that if it only locks up, that you have to reboot in safe mode. If it runs fine and cleans the things off and doesn't lock up on it, you can normally run both the SpyBot and Adware in regular mode.
Right.
That is just a caution because, like Steve was saying, though, if you haven't run it in a long time, yes, 10 to 1 odds, you're going to have to reboot it in safe mode.
Okay,
but if you're doing this on a weekly basis, you should be able to do it.
Nick always can't miss one step of the dance, so I would just wanted to follow
No, you did the right thing. That's really a first-time user.
Yep.
And then when you're done with the first time, the final step says to email Lori.
Yep.
And get the day-to-day steps, which should make that happen. Well, listen, we've only got a couple of minutes left, so Andrew, I just want to ask you real quick, what's next for Ambrosia?
Well, I can't talk about that. No, we have a number of things we're working on. One of them is a really cool internet-workable racing game that we've been working on for a long time. It's going to be really wild. It's called Redline.
Very cool.
And we just like to work on projects that we think are fun and enjoyable, and hope people enjoy them as well.
There you go.
I think that's great. Well, we are, in fact, done for another week. We're not. You told me I had a. What were you?
I had 2 minutes.
Oh, wait. I didn't get my big plug in.
Oh, you get your big
plug in. Our website is www.ambrosiasw.com. Thank you.
AmbrosiaSW.com.
Thank you for coming in.
I was actually on that site.
Can I remind you in the last minute that you forgot to mention your website?
You mean asknick.com?
That's asknick.com.
That's the whole reason you wanted that there, isn't it? Yeah. You've been saving it. You've been waiting for that the whole time, weren't you?
We also missed two segments.
Yeah, well, it's because we had other things to do.
Yeah, more important things.
That is now it for another week. Check out my website, asknick.com. Check out... There we go. When my eyes beheld an eerie sight. And check out my website. Check out soundbites.org, where you can vote in the poll, which is a pretty nifty one this week, all about where you get your news, particularly the week's political news. And we've got all kinds of neat stuff going on. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Andrew Welch, Rob Linton. I'm Nick Francesco. We will be back here next week with the November edition of Soundbites. Only and exclusively on the greatest radio station, Soundbite, 1180 WHAM. Help me.
Heating bills will rise as much as 50% this winter. Let Colby replace 8 or more of your old...